Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. Here you are, right here in my home. The sun's going down right here behind me in the beautiful Texas Medical Center in the most awesome city in the world, Houston, Texas. And as you can start seeing that sun go down, darkness will come in and we'll see the stars out there here just shortly. But welcome to the program tonight. This is going to be an hour that you will not forget. And I want you to, if you can, go ahead and let people know, hey, they're live tonight. The last couple of weeks we had to do repeats because guests kept canceling on me. I don't know what they were plagued with, but every now and then when you try to get really good guests like we have tonight, sometimes their schedules get really packed and they have to a plane that's been delayed or whatever. And there's been some sickness going around too. But anyway, we have a live person tonight and you're going to really enjoy this program. It's going to be inspirational. It's going to be heart-tugging, but it's also going to be informative. And we've always said every week that if you just give us a few moments every Sunday night, you'll be able to learn something that you can take on into your week the following week. So I'm just looking forward to our program tonight. And you know, next week, Marlita Comston is going to be on. And look at the thickness of this book. Good night, Maynard. Who writes a book that thick? Mine's, look at mine. Anyway, she's going to be with us next week, and you will not want to miss this one, called Love Illuminated, A Journey to Awaken and Deepen Your Faith. So on Easter Sunday night, we're going to talk about love and faith. And hey, that sounds like that goes hand in hand. So that's going to be a good time next Sunday evening, live at 8 o'clock. It's been a busy week. I've been traveling literally all around and across the country and just got back from Michigan after dropping down in Chicago and did a big Homeland Security training in Washington, D.C. This week. Tomorrow, I'll be in Conroe, Texas, doing a big conference there. And then Tuesday, I'll be training a whole bunch of sheriffs and deputies in Brazoria County. Texas, which is right down the road. And then it just keeps on going all the way. This is the busy time of the year for me and going to go all the way, pretty busy, all the way through August, September. And then that part of the calendar is starting to fill up now too. And you know, when you work about things that happen in your life and your schedule, and I was on a plane in Traverse City, Michigan. And when you're in that plane, you are out of control with what happens with your life, your timetable, your schedule, your calendar, when it's going to land, when you're going to get to eat, when you're going to get to anything is out of your control. So as I was sitting there wondering when I was going to land in Houston, because we had to drop off in Chicago first and then to get on another plane to come to Houston. I had to get to Houston to be able to do a funeral for a little 5-year-old girl, a memorial service for her that we're going to be talking about that type of grief this evening. But when you're on a plane, wanting it to get there quicker and faster and no delays and no turbulence and hurry up. That's out of your control. So I was writing on a United napkin. Some of those things in life that I can't control, and some things that I can. So before we bring our guest in tonight, I just want to let you know some of those thoughts that came across my mind. And one of those things that's out of my control is, I can't control my past. That's already happened. There's no way to go back to be able to control any of that. And then also, as I look at that, there's really no way that I can control the future. What's going to happen tomorrow when I get into Houston traffic heading to the next conference driving? I can't control the traffic. If I could, I would be a billionaire in Houston, and everybody would want to know, how do you do it, Greg? But there's no way to be able to control the future either. Those two things are outside of my ability to control. Another one is the actions of other people. That's out of my control. I can't be in charge of that, how they act, how they feel, how they respond to me, how they talk to me, how they will lift me up or tear me down. I can't control that. I also can't control the opinions of other people, what they think of me. I spoke a lot of times this week, and I always like to have that interaction where you're eyeball to eyeball with people and you're hearing what's going on in their life, what resonated with them, with what was said, if it helped or hurt, what they thought about it. And there's no way to be able to control that opinion. They will either like you or they won't. And no matter what you do, sometimes you're never going to get them to like you. And then all those things that happen around me is totally out of my control. And also, the outcome of all the efforts that I put into stuff. Our guest tonight's an author, and after you write that book, and she may want to expound on this, you can't control if anybody's going to buy it or not. You can't control how they review it or not. So I don't even read any of my reviews, because it would mess my lunch up if there was a bad one in there. So I can't, I have to surround myself with things that are within my control. So the things that are within my control is my boundaries. Where am I going to allow those boundaries to be placed in life? And I need that. I need to know my boundaries, and you need to know yours too. My thoughts and actions. What I do tomorrow, how I respond to people tomorrow, what I will do when this happens or doesn't happen or whatever. My thoughts and actions, I am in 100% control of that. And you ought to be too. And when you let other people control your thoughts and your actions, they are trying to manipulate and control you. You let them outside of those boundaries and say, hey, wait, this is the way I feel, and this is what I'm going to do with this. And then also the goals I set. I have been given, and you have been given, a God, divinely inspired destiny. And I try to live within that. And I can't control outside of that. So I try to set the goals that I want to obtain and try to make and meet in my life. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're not big enough, but I do know that my God's dreams and goals are bigger than mine ever will be. He has more faith in me than I do myself. I can also control what I give my energy to, what I love, what I care about. And sometimes I put more energy into my work at the office, which is right across the street over there, than I do with things that are really important to me. because I know there's somebody outside my office door that can replace me, do my job better than me, and do it for a lot cheaper than what I do it. So I need to be able to understand, where do I really want to put my efforts into? My energy, my time, my blood, sweat, and tears. And the older I get, the more that becomes a concern of mine. I also can control how I speak to myself, how I look at myself. And for years, I have allowed my past to speak and continue to speak. Greg, you'll never amount to anything. You know you were an accident. You know you're not worthy of anything. You're never going to be successful. And sometimes we let that audio tape play over and over and over. It's time to delete that. It's hard to get up in that brain and erase it. Whiteout doesn't work up here. I've tried that. It doesn't. So we have to try to fill it with something positive that'll help me to control what I think and how I speak to myself. And then the last thing, and then we'll bring in our guest tonight, is how I handle challenges. Sometimes I'm really good at it. Sometimes I'm really bad at it. And a lot of times when people say, you can't do that, it'll cause me to rear up with my bullheadedness and hardheadedness to say, oh, watch this. I'll get it done quicker than what you ever dreamed of it. So how I handle those challenges sometimes is exactly what I'm in control of. But those things that I'm out of control of, let it go. Recognize that you're not in that charge of. But those things that you are in control of, grab them, grasp them, hang on to them, and do the best possible things that you can with them throughout this coming week. Because I promise you, there's going to be challenges that you face tomorrow morning when you walk into the office. Is it going to be how you want it? Probably not. But the thing that you can control is your reaction to it. So good luck. God bless you on that this coming week, because it's going to be a really busy week as we go into Passion Week, week of Easter and Good Friday, and all of those things that cause a lot of us to be busier than normal. But it's an awesome, awesome week. So I just wanted to share those things with you. If you want to get involved in the conversation tonight, there's several ways. Looks like we're already on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. I'm looking at it right here. Also, you can get on there and post a question or a comment. You can call me at 832, well, don't call me, text me at 832-396-6525. And during the commercial break, I will scroll down and read your question. Or you can call in live tonight at 888-627-6008. And the beautiful voice of TJ will patch you right into my guest and me live right here. And we are all the way around the world this evening. So welcome. I tell you what, I am excited to have our guest on tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed her book, which is called Reaching for Beautiful. And her name is Sally McQuillan, MC, capital QUILLEN. You'll want to write that down and listen to all the initials after her name. She is a LCSW. She is a CADC. The only thing that's behind my name is BS. So I don't know. There's not too many of these credentials behind my name, but she is a psychotherapist in private practice specializing in addiction recovery, grief, and trauma healing. You will want to listen to her. TJ, bring her in so we can see her awesome face as we talk about her. She's an avid reader with a double major in writing and dance criticism in college. So I promise you, Sally, you won't want to watch me dance. And she began working in public relations and marketing prior to obtaining her master's degree in social work. And this book, and lift up that book so everybody can see the cover of this beautiful book, Reaching for Beautiful, is her first book. And I guarantee you, she's got more in her because she knows how to write. She and her husband live on the North Shore of Chicago, and I just landed there a couple times this week where they've raised their three children. Sally, welcome to the program. It is an honor to have you with us tonight.
Truly, such a pleasure to be here. I was taking notes. I could have listened to you. I'm sure many of your guests have said that. I could have just sat here listening to all that you said, and we're so very much aligned. I really am pleased to be here.
Well, it's our honor, and I want to tell you, this next 45 minutes is about you, and I want to make it this about you. I want you to share your story. I want you to tell maybe some of those things that if you had the control, I promise it would have been a whole different world, wouldn't it? But what happens when you're out of control when it deals with your children? That's what we're going to talk about in more ways than one. So tell us about what this book is about and a little bit about the story as deep as you want to go with it, Sally. And the floor is yours. The program is yours.
Appreciate it. I lost my firstborn, Christopher Joseph, almost, well, 9 years ago. And I can't even believe that this book that I've been writing, which was based on the year and a half after he died, but is an amalgamation of more time since, and captures the story of his life, took me as long as it did and is just now coming out in the world. But that's attributable to the fact that there was such a process in it. I needed every moment, I needed every word that came out on the page of Reaching for Beautiful to be able to heal and connect with him in the way that I yearn to connect. So here we are. He died at the age of 21 with three other young men. They had gone up to a lake house and were partying and with a big group of boys during their holiday break, doing what just about any 20 or 21-year-old young man might do. And apparently decided it would be a good idea to get out on a frozen lake and in a canoe. Unfortunately, none of them su survived that. And so it was a deeply traumatic loss. I think losing a child is inherently traumatic because it happens out of time and because we lose not just this child that we love, but a part of our occupation as parents and a part of our purpose and identity. And it's also, it was traumatic for me because if there's one thing that I've always wanted to be able to do for each of my three children, and I have two living children, Caroline, who's 28, and William, who's 25, is to feel that they can come to me for comfort and nurturing. And so to think that my son may have been frightened or may have been hurting in any way, and not to have been able to either be there to help soothe him or, frankly, to take his place was a big part of what made. There's so many layers to my trauma, but that was pretty, my whole world was, the word shattered is a good one, and it's one you've used, and I needed to very slowly but surely retether myself back to the earth and put pieces together.
Sally, when something like this happens and you have other children, how hard is it? How difficult is it to be the parent? Because your children were going to be, let's say, if it was 9 years ago, what was 20 or was like 16?
2016 in
And
January.
then, and she was, when you
Christopher
passed,
was
when
so,
Christopher passed?
So Christopher was in college at 21. Caroline at 19 was also in college. So she was away at the time. And then my youngest was in the middle of his high school years at 16.
So, how difficult is it to be the parent and have to be the pillar, you and your husband, the healer, the comforter, when inside everything's being ripped apart emotionally? How difficult is that role during that time?
Admittedly, and I've been saying this recently, my husband helped with this because we have grieved differently and yet also have the parallel experience of having been essentially infatuated with our firstborn. And so he would encourage me to show up in different ways that I was not inclined to do. And my living children put me in a position where I needed to show up. I remember, I think it was maybe it was a week, within a week after losing Christopher, I was standing in the high school that I had attended, that my youngest was at, and having a conference with his teachers about how to best serve him after this loss. And I remember the feeling because any listeners who've grieved know that you are physiologically so impacted that you're a little bit of a shadow of yourself. I was in a lot of shock. And, it took just about everything I had to just put one foot in front of the other, but there's nothing I wouldn't do for any of my children, and that was a godsend because I don't know what I might have done if I hadn't had that incentive.
You know, I did a little memorial service yesterday for a little 5-year-old that passed. Beautiful little blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl. What would you say if those parents that are listening tonight, by chance they may be, and to the other people that's listening that is dealing with this complexity of that complex grief of losing a child, because it's different than losing a grandparent at 102, or somebody that has had cancer for 4 or 5 years, but with the shock of this type of experience, what would you say to them? What was some of the things that absolutely was, hey, this saved me?
It was interesting because you talked about the things that we can and cannot control. And having had a spiritual foundation as a result of when I was 25, I stopped drinking and had a really huge lifestyle change, which introduced me to a spiritual program for living. And this program did help me because one of the things that I think is so, I mean, there's so many different complicating factors, but was to have this spiritual foundation. And for the people who do not or don't have, one of the most critical pieces to moving through my grief process, which I continue to do and will for the rest of my life, but to have gotten through some of the dense, darkest times was to let go of guilt, attempt to anyway, aspire to, because as parents, we believe our job is to keep our children alive. And we, especially nowadays, direct so much of our attention to probably over, and certainly I over parented in this way. My my Christopher was, he just challenged me from the very get-go. I was just trying to keep up with him. He had attention deficit. He was constantly in motion. He was impulsive, reckless. So I worried about him even before he himself developed an addiction. And I felt like it was my job throughout the course of his life, because I hadn't yet gotten the memo that it really, you can control so very little. And for me, the memo is, Sally, your only job with your children is to love them. Certainly, you provide structure, you give them parameters, you let them know what your values are, and you attempt to instill those. But Christopher, I don't know how much he was listening to much of what his mother had to say. I hope and continue to hope, in having written to him and written this book in honor of him, that he also, I feel like I've come to, I feel his spirit here with me now. I hope that he knows how very loved he is. And I think because of my own childhood history of trauma, that also complicated this. So there was the guilt, and then there were some of the wounds from my childhood that presented themselves both in parenting my children, because I think that always happens, right? If we've got anything that's unresolved from our past, it decides to sort of keep knocking at our door so that we can learn from it in the present. And so I was really tasked to try to let go of fear even while Chris was alive. I had it because of my father's alcoholism and volatility, and because he wasn't particularly capable of showing me the love that I insist I must show to my kids.
And I want to let the radio station know we're not going to take a commercial. This is so good. Just don't take a break. We're on a roll. We're just going to go right on through, if that's all right, Sally. If
Course.
you need some water, feel free to take a drink, while we're talking, and we'll do that. But with your father having an alcohol issue, you had your own private alcohol issue too, correct?
I did.
And when that went to your son, did that put fuel on the guilt and explain that? And then how, wait, sometimes things happen. It's not because it had to automatically do that. But tell me how you process that now that you're a psychotherapist.
Yes, I do think there was, and these are the through lines of Reaching for Beautiful, and they're the through lines of my life story and the lessons that Christopher and I believe God has been trying to help me learn, which, we all have our own path. And because I had grown up with a father who frightened me and sort of chased that love, in some ways that ended up impacting my relationship with Christopher, because I also chased our connection and couldn't always trust it because he was always slipping through my fingers. And of course, particularly since his mom was attempting to rein him in and he was such a free-spirited wild Mustang, it was impossible to do that. And all he wanted to do was, keep even further away. And so that was reminiscent of my relationship in part with my dad, that was sort of this plea of why don't you love me kind of a thing. And then likewise, when I had also gone through my experience of getting sober. And especially back then, I was, first of all, we didn't even know that my father was an alcoholic. We didn't even have the terminology for it
Right.
until later. And it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that my father made an attempt at getting sober. And because of that, I really feel like that influenced my trajectory because he was educating us about alcoholism. And I discovered that, I had inherited that gene. Now, I came to that discovery, sort of fighting it, but I ultimately, it was clear. And while it was this incredible blessing and is the foundation, my sobriety is the foundation upon which all good things have come into my life, it's also, it means that I was different. It means that I felt different. And so between having a father like mine and then having my own alcoholism, there was enough shame that hadn't entirely been dissolved yet that I was trying hard to prevent my oldest from ever having to feel different. And, fast forward, lo and behold, he also has inherited his father's attention deficit. And so he's learning differently and he's starting to feel like he doesn't fit a little bit and wanting nothing than to be part of a gang.
Yeah. Sally, was your fear when all this was processing through with your dad, then you, and then as you notice it being passed down to him, was your fear always in the back of your head? Life could be shortened here. I have to do everything I can to, because my older brother, not my oldest, but my middle brother, we always knew that he was the wild one. He always had that tumbler of, we was told it was Coke, but it was always Jack and Coke. And we always know if Tony lives to be 40, it'll be a miracle. We always kind of talked about that. Was there always in the back of your mind, wow, this is out of my control, but boy, I'm trying to keep him close enough to prevent something happening? Was that always like, oh, something's
It
going to
was
happen,
more of an
something's going to happen?
intuition. It was more of an intuition. I mean, it's
Yeah.
interesting that even before he picked up a drink, I suspected that he would have a problem with it. He had all of these other criteria that he met, his impulsivity and his recklessness and his never really getting ahead of the moment that he was in, his extremely social nature, all
Yeah.
of these things, plus his parents' sensitivity, some inclination towards depression and anxiety. So all of these elements are kind of a surefire means by which, addiction can. And what we didn't know either back then, and I was naive about it, was that I thought I will just be so loving that it will, again, giving myself more power than I really deserve. I'll just love them so much that it will offset this predisposition, not appreciating that if you have two parents, both of whom have this strain of addiction, the odds are pretty great you're going to develop it too.
Did he light up a room when he walked in it? He was the life
He
of the event.
really was. It's
Yeah.
I know it's so often said in reference to people who die young, and it was true of him. He was so charming. In you just have to picture, and I say this, I said this recently, picture Brad Pitt in A River Runs Through It
Yeah.
or a Legends of the Fall. He the light shone through his sparkly green eyes. Yes.
Wow. Now, When you're starting to notice this and you knew it was out of your control and the fear was there, how did you and your husband keep any type of sense of peace when he was out, gone at a clubhouse with friends? Was it always an anxious moment for you?
It was my husband, bless him, was working as a car dealer. So he was working 15-hour
Right.
days and on Saturdays. And so by the time we were just talking about this the other day, by the time he'd be home on Sunday, I'd say, here you have them. Take these kids of mine and do what you will. And he gladly did, and he treasured that time and did lots of fun things that this mama was not doing because she was just trying to, I don't know, put one foot in front of the other. But we did it did and it will. When you have a child who's struggling with addiction, it causes a fracture. Because of course, as you can imagine, all Joe wanted to do when he was home was have fun and have
Yeah.
things go well because he felt guilty about not having more time to be with them. And so it was tricky because there's predictably this yin and yang, which Joe and I have inherently anyway. And we alternate, one would be a little bit more enabling, and then the other one's attempting to provide discipline. And for me, I was attempting to provide more of the discipline and the structure and the rules. But guess what? I didn't even know that part of what I had in two of my children, and in all of them, there's a certain understandable amount of self-will, was some defiance. So there wasn't much I could tell any of them to do that they were rushing to do.
Is
And
that your same nature too, Sally?
not quite to this degree. So
Yeah.
there were things about this that I could relate to, but there were other things that I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
And the more I got more closely acquainted with my husband and his family, I realized this was just part of the deal, but I hadn't seen it. Or
Right.
understood it. Yeah.
When you went through the You said the was it a faith-based recovery program that helped you?
Yes,
Was this what faith-based recovery program was it?
well, I'm disinclined to promote
I'm with you. Okay. No, I just I'm familiar with one. We have one we're involved with, and I was
Yes,
wondering if it was the same one.
but
Did that help you deal with him? I mean, did you actually use the tools that and was your education all prior to in the work that you do?
it was
Or did
interesting
that come
because
after
some of
this
it came
accident with your
after.
son?
Some of it came after. I had studied to become a therapist and then taken time off while I was raising the kids and was privileged enough to be able to essentially be a full-time mom with a variety of part-time jobs and things. But then I felt as if I was already specialized in addiction just based on my personal experience,
Right.
but I did study to become further, academically and professionally specialized in it. And now, doing the work that I do with my clients, I feel as if I have a certain amount of expertise, but I didn't altogether. I was learning as I went.
Right. During the challenges of his teenage years and the addiction or the alcohol. What's some of the things that people could have helped you with that you recommend a friend or somebody listening? Say, hey, if you have somebody that you know of that's dealing with a wild child, like you mentioned, Christopher, what did you need during those times as a parent?
It's interesting because I do think that what I needed was similar to what I needed in my grieving. What I needed
Okay.
when I was raising a wild child and what I needed when I was grieving the loss of a child was to somehow find a way to feel less alone. I was sensitive to any experience that could alienate me because, like Christopher, I have always wanted so much to aspire towards normal, whatever that is. And interestingly enough, I now, as I'm nearing the age of 62, I finally don't really, it doesn't matter to me so much, but it did while I was in my 30s and 40s. It doesn't matter so much anymore. I'm much more, I feel so inspired to go ahead and share my experience and hope that it helps other people feel less alone themselves. So what I would say to somebody who is having that difficulty is to be taking really exceptional care of yourself through self-help of some form or another with a therapist, and certainly to be checking in to determine what kind of fear you yourself are carrying. I don't think I realized that I was in fight or flight for years. I was
Did
busy
you flip-flop from one to the other?
from fight or flight.
Yeah. Or did you pick one specifically?
It's always interesting because I note this with some of my clients. I can do both. I can do
Yeah.
both. Yes. And so yes, I can actually pull the flight pretty well and defend myself too effectively. And that's another thing that Christopher's taught me, right? Is that I could curl up in a ball. I could be and was and sometimes still have moments where I have to lean into curling up in a ball and crying and just letting it wash through me, letting that energy move through me. But I also am meant to live a life where I am serving and having joy. It actually brings me closer to Christopher, I think, when I'm having those moments of joy. And those moments of joy, when they come, when I'm loving all of the people that I love,
Yeah.
including him.
Did at first, did you have a self guilt when the first time you laughed, the
Yes.
first time you felt a little bit
Yes.
of joy in a dark area, and you say, "Whoa, I shouldn't be laughing." Did that run through your mind of, "Hey, wait, I shouldn't be doing that"?
Absolutely. I do think that because another thing I have is, and I think it could be born of growing up in an alcoholic household. I don't know. It may be trauma related, but this incredible loyalty. So sometimes those of us who are grieving anyone, and certainly our children, will feel as if the only way to honor them and maintain our loyalty to them is to hold on to the pain. There is so much pain to move through that it's hard enough, even when we let it flow, to sort of continue to experience more and more lightness.
Since you wrote the book, was that therapeutic for you?
Very much.
And then do you heal each time you have a conversation like this? Is there a little bit of healing? So both questions, I know it's a double-sided question here, but what kind of therapeutic resource did you get out of results from putting all that ink on the page? Because
Two
that's hard
things.
work.
Yes, it was. I've chuckled about the fact that you would not have wanted to leave. You would not have wanted to read the first draft because it would
Yes.
just be pure, how much I love my son and how desperate I was with yearning and missing him. And so I attempt to give an inside look at what it's like to grieve a child early in Reaching for Beautiful, but I also have written plenty of drafts. The first draft, though, for me was especially healing because I was writing to him.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I was encouraged to discontinue doing that. And that meant some letting go. That was part of where my loyalty lay. But I needed to let go enough to not prevent anyone who reads my memoir from also feeling a part of it because there's such an intimacy there.
Yeah.
And so I do reveal that, but I also want, again, to help other people feel less alone in it. So also being a therapist and being someone who feels everything very deeply, I needed to process on the page everything I felt, be able to move from guilt to self-forgiveness, be able to write through some of the self-pity that was, why don't I get to have, my child here any longer, and into gratitude for having gotten to have him, and getting to have him now, and moving from fear, which I had been attempting to let go of during his life, and then questioned whether I should go back to holding on tight to it. Moving from that to love, moving from the trauma to a feeling of safety, moving from pain to having some joy, moments of joy.
In that movement, did you ever experience looking at everything that happened in this tragedy from a bird's eye view looking down, and then from the perspective of being involved in it? I've always heard that when you move from the bird's eye view to the actual it was happening to you and you're writing about it and experiencing it, that's when you can tell healing has begun, because you're not watching it happen, you're involved in the situation, experiencing it happen. Did you have any of those type of situations in your healing process?
I love that because one of the things you were asking about is, has it been therapeutic also since the release of the book to, I think that's what you were asking me.
Yes.
And there's a piece that exposes, it's raw, it's vulnerable. As I talk to you, I think it crystallizes this beautiful perspective that Christopher granted me that was a result of having you trying to maintain that higher perspective, because I think that's the ebb and the flow of grief too,
Yeah.
is you're in the thick of it and it's so messy and it's so tangled and it's so complex, and then you come up for air, hopefully, especially if you are willing to let yourself, I call it going on the bear hunt, sort of go through it. And then you come up for air and you get a little bit of those perspectives that are bird's eye view perspectives. And you think to yourself, oh, this does help in writing it down and then getting some distance from it, because it's like, oh, it's so simple. In the end, isn't it? That love is all that really matters,
Yeah.
and that we're not really here to be spared from pain or challenge, that in fact, we're very much supposed to be faced with it so that we can put the pieces together.
Was you a journal writer prior to all this? You sure you never really had a journal, a notebook? Did you put down your thoughts and emotions?
It's funny that I really didn't do that too much. I certainly verbalized it probably more than anybody around me was interested in hearing about. I've just been psychologically oriented, so I've always wanted. And I think that was one of the things that drove me to write this too, was what would it be like if people could really, if I could illuminate what's happening on the inside, because my experience had been so often that people had no idea what I was feeling, and there was quite a lot of activity going on behind the scenes.
Right. What kind of challenges? And we're on the last lap here, so I want to, try to wind down. Well, but what kind of challenges was this for you and your husband with your own relationship between the two of you of losing a child?
It's interesting to me because I know that so often people speak to marriages falling apart.
Yeah.
I, after the loss of a child, we probably had more friction as we were raising and scrambling and fear-driven than we did after losing Chris. However, we have had to very much do what we've had to do in general, and that is to respect each of our unique ways of being.
Yeah.
And if he needs to keep moving, you go and keep moving. If I need to have, you know, it turns out I didn't even realize until more recently that I'm not so outgoing. I'm an outgoing introvert. I need that time. So we do respect the ways you know, mine actually, even though I'm now grieving more publicly with this book coming out, my husband is much more public. To me, there's something very private about my love, even though I simultaneously want to shout it from the rooftops. So I don't know if that it's just a relative difference.
Right. Is there something that is in your home right now that pivots around this wild child that if the house started burning, you would reach for that because that is the one thing that you have that symbolizes him?
Wow, we have so many things that, and you know, I wear my St. Christopher's medal. I rarely take it off. And another little, I have a couple of things that I wear in the way of jewelry, including a tweet that he wrote, which is, "Life is honestly so beautiful as long as you allow it to be,"
Ooh.
which was the inspiration for Reaching for Beautiful as the title of my memoir. And I think as long as I have those things, of course, I'm thinking photographs.
Yeah.
And I did, I remembered early on wanting to ask everybody I knew for pictures.
Yeah. Faith, how important is that for you to endure this?
Critical. I think I would be lost if I didn't believe there was some greater plan in
Was there
all
anger
of
towards
that. I
your
did
God?
not, I'm very strange in that anger is not my go-to. It was my husband's.
Yeah.
I'm more of a sad default, but I've had moments where I've been angry, and I'm not going to pretend otherwise, but there was a period where it was really imperative for me to come to that place with God, which is, oh, you're feeling this alongside me. You didn't do this to punish me in some way.
Right.
I didn't bring this about because I feared it would happen, that kind of a thing.
Right.
So beginning to believe that he is here, alive in spirit, that he's got an incredibly powerful spirit and a job to do, where he can sort of use his light for even more good in the world, that gives me solace.
Yeah. Sally, I hold up your book again. I can't express how much I appreciate you sharing tonight. There it is, Reaching for Beautiful, a memoir of loving and losing a wild child. I apologize for not doing any of the talking points that your publicist sent me, but I like this to
I
where we can just
loved
talk.
this.
You shared beautifully tonight. Anything else on your heart before we
Thank you,
close out?
Doctor. No, I felt like I just dove right in, and you were so easy to do so with. So I appreciate all of you who've been listening, and I'm sending love and light to those who are grieving today.
You have another book in you?
Can't even begin to think about that yet. Perhaps it'll be some sort of a
When does this
self-help.
one release? When was it?
April 1st, so it's just come out.
Oh, how's it
So
doing?
I think it's doing pretty well. So spread the word to anyone. I hope it will be an uplifting message, even though it may be something that needs to be paced.
Yeah. Reaching for Beautiful. Get on right now. Amazon, is that the best way
I
to
think
get a
it
hold of it?
is. Anywhere your favorite books are sold.
There you go. Get on there and buy this. This is not going to disappoint you. This will uplift you. It will give you wisdom. It will give you inspiration. And I appreciate you sharing the story with us tonight and sharing it with the world. And tell your husband thank you. Thank him for sharing you with us this evening. And you're welcome back here anytime, Sally.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank
Really
you so
means the
much.
world. Take
Appreciate
care.
you being on. Thanks for sharing. Like we
Thank
do each and every week. Tell you what, this hour just flew by. But I always want to let you know, no matter what you face tonight, no matter what happens when you answer that phone call here in a minute, or whatever you're facing tomorrow going into work, Sally, I'm sure, would agree with me on this. There's always, always, always hope. I promise you, as dark as it is right outside that window, right there, there's going to be sunlight there in the morning. There's always hope. So hang on, don't give up on that. Join us right here next week for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have an awesome week. And this week, please, please focus on what this week stands for those that have faith. And I promise you, if you lean into him, he won't lean back. He'll embrace you. God bless you. Have an awesome week, and we'll see you next Sunday night on Easter Sunday. Good night. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.